FT now.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Not SFP Now. No, this is the Pandoric Reopens. We have to get another theme tune, Raisa. What do you think?
Yes, we do. I think in future we'll just play the current Doctor Who theme over the opening thing.
Nah, I've got a better idea. We'll find a TARDIS sound effect so it's actually even shorter than that.
Okay.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Pandoric Reopens. It's the first episode that we've actually done, in fact, since 2013. Was it 2013? I think it was, wasn't it? Being a part of 2013.
It was.
In this episode, we're going to be discussing the first two episodes of the current series of Doctor Who, the ninth season, or ninth series as we say here in the UK, because we speak proper English. We're going to be covering The Magician's Apprentice and The Witch's Familiar, given that they are both essentially two parts of the one story. I'm going to kick this off and hand it right over to Raisa. What did you think?
I there are two levels. The standalone story, the straightforward or reasonably straightforward Dalek story over the course of the two parts was excellent. The arc issues are a separate conversation, so we need to handle it separately. But the individual story over the two parts was excellent. I thought that Julian Bleach, who's been playing Davros for us in the modern era, pretty much gave a BAFTA-level performance. Both the actors did really, really well.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I've got to say, I enjoyed Missy in these two hours. I'm getting used to her now.
I am too.
Although I still think the Master should be male.
Yeah, I do too. Did you catch that sort of offhand comment when she was preparing to use the brooch to kill the Dalek about how she got the brooch because the doctor gave it to her after the birth of their daughter?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. If she turns out to be Susan's grandmother, I'm going to be very unhappy. But that's another conversation.
Well, that'd be also a weird timey-wimey sort of thing as well.
Yes.
Because it suggests that, she grew a penis and, became the master.
Yes.
Or something to that effect. But, it's all weird, this timey-wimey, time lordy stuff. I'm with you. I actually enjoyed it as a really, really good Dalek episode. I thought the performance between Capaldi and Bleach as Davros was that really made it for me. The level of the performances that those two, because it's all like it gets to a point where the Doctor really, really does believe that Davros is dying, and I just thought we knew that it was a trap, but the Doctor sort of being the gullible character that he is and wanting to sort of like acknowledge the good in people, fell for it.
Yeah, or halfway, seeing that he says, I meant to do that at the end. It was fascinating because on Davros' side, you really kind of believed, that even though he was faking out the Doctor, you really believed that he wished him well, having found Gallifrey. Mm-hmm. That he understood that part of it, at least.
And also,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you was going to elaborate on what you were saying there, so I'll let you finish.
I lost the thought, so you can go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I was going to change tack on you. I mean, the part at the end where Missy is trying to get the doctor to kill Clara in the Dalek, I thought that was actually really good, and I thought at one point he was going to do it.
Yes.
You know, and as soon as Clara said mercy, and that sort of kind of harked back to last year's Into the Dalek. It almost sort of like it was eerie, sort of like almost as if it was harking back to that Dalek in last year's episode that was in distress, because that actually said mercy as well.
Yes, although there was one other Dalek that said mercy. There was an episode where River Song killed a Dalek that said mercy beforehand. Mm. So I guess we can retcon that, you know, whereas the doctor affected it, but yeah, who knows.
But it's sort of, there was that, and there's also the fact that it kind of got the doctor going back in time to actually help Davros.
Yes.
Because in the trailer here in the UK, it was making it out that it looked like he was going to kill Davros.
Yes.
That he was going to go back and kill Davros. And I thought that was pretty clever marketing sort of thing. But yeah, it was good, but, you know, how it plays into the Impossible Girl story arc is, you know, the main thing, because so like Clara Oswin started off as a Dalek in her very first episode, and she ended up in one again, and it kind of seemed like a blown opportunity to actually drop a few stitches on that.
You could infer that the doctor taking her face in his hands after he gets her out and saying I'm sorry is an acknowledgement on his part that he remembers what happened, but it's hard to say how to read that. I'm hoping that they deal with it, because we have the same problem in season 9 that we have in season 8, and I'll just recap it briefly, which is, you know, even if you ignore classic continuity and just deal with modern continuity, Rose swallowed the time vortex for 15 minutes, and that had major consequences. And poor Donna had the medic crisis thing happen, and that had major consequences. And you're telling me that Clara Oswald can be split into a gazillion pieces throughout, you know, across space and time, and then be reconstituted at the other end of that, and the second shoe is going to drop.
Mm-hmm.
We never hear about it again. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and it was never really particularly referenced in the 50th anniversary episode. I mean, that's where they kind of dropped the ball on it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's something. I was actually talking to Nick Yanes a couple of weeks ago about this. He was asking what I felt about the new Doctor Who, and I thought, well, it's fine, but I'm just not too happy with the fact that they're not doing anything to resolve this Impossible Scale story arc. And he said that he thought that the Doctor had, you know, gone back in time and saved her and basically, you know, located Clara Prime.
And how did he get that feeling?
I don't know, because, you know, I don't know where he's got that feeling from. I think he's just sort of like kind of put two and two together and come up with five. Because that certainly wasn't shown us on the screen, and it wasn't inferred in any of the episodes that he'd done that.
Huh.
You know?
Okay.
So,
but that makes sense, though, that because I've done that too. I've applied mental band-aids to continuity issues all, you know, for years. So maybe he's just applied a continuity band-aid to such an extent that he thinks it's canon. It happens.
Well, that's what I think he's probably done. I mean, he is an avid comic book reader, after all, and, you know, Doctor Who continuity and comic book continuity, the two have a lot in common. As in, they're forever constantly retconning things.
Yes, yeah.
But, yeah, it's a weird one. I mean, they actually shown both episodes back-to-back this afternoon here in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
because unfortunately last night when it aired, it was up against the Rugby World Cup final, which had something like 8 million viewers.
Mm-hmm.
And X Factor was on at the same time as well, and that had a few million viewers. So the overnights for last night's episode was down to sort of like something like 3.7 million.
Yeesh.
So didn't do too well, but that said, we're not getting the full story here because we're not hearing about the figures on BBC iPlayer yet.
No.
But you know, so like it had competition from two sides last night, whereas normally it's just competing with the X Factor.
Mm.
And next week it's going to be somewhat worse because they're showing the episode here in the UK at 8:30 next week, as opposed to 7:40. So they're moving the times around again.
Oh.
And you know, it's crazy. It's BBC's logic. But yeah, so like, what half did you think was the strongest, the first or the second?
Overall, well, it depends on what you're watching for. If you're watching for story, the first half was stronger. If you're watching for character dynamics, the second half was stronger.
Mm. Yeah, I kind of graded it as the first half being stronger in my review, I think. Because so like you know, the acting in both parts was fantastic. I mean, I gave the first half for story 9.5. The second half of it for story, I gave it an 8.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You know, I've got a feeling that you might have been a little bit more generous.
probably by
an 8.5.
Something like that. I will say I did. I preferred the character beats in the second part as character beats. Although the first part had the awesomeness that was Peter Capaldi playing the electric guitar.
That was actually him.
That was actually him. And he actually picked out the guitar himself.
He could have picked out a better one, to be honest. I mean, I don't like Yamahas myself.
He wanted to go for something that didn't look obvious or midlife crisis-y. He said in an interview that the Fenders and the Stratocasters he could have picked looked like he was having a midlife crisis.
Basically, I think the Stratocaster was just too much guitar for him. Because I'm not having a midlife crisis and I own a Strat. And I can play it, thank you very much. I enjoyed the guitar bit, and I enjoyed the little joke, that he did, you know, sort of like about never bringing gnats to an axe fight.
Yes.
Or something. I thought that was, you know, that was just fantastic fun. And, you know, the thing is, my niece didn't even get that.
Oh.
But then again, she's only 12, and, you know, I think, to be honest, you know, guitar as a trendy instrument, it's kind of had its day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still a trendy instrument, but, you know, so I think it's only a trendy instrument if you're over 30.
Mm-hmm. But this doctor is on an assortment of levels, so that's okay.
Uh-huh. Well, the thing is, it harkens back as well, because Pete Capaldi used to play in a punk band with Craig Ferguson.
That's right, yeah.
So I thought it was quite fun to actually bring that element to the show. I thought it was, it gave it something.
It did. And I liked the inclusion of Unit. I know that you thought the Unit was superfluous to the story, and this particular story, there was an argument for that, but I think that they were laying the groundwork for seeing them later.
I felt the use of Unit in this story was kind of gratuitous, because they didn't really do anything. didn't really make any great contribution to the story.
No, they just they were there to make Clara look like a Mary Sue.
You know, I mean, and also the stopping of the planes at the first episode as well. You know, sort of like I've seen a lot of criticism about that. There's a lot of people that weren't too keen on that. But personally, I thought, well, you know, so like it's just so like it's just Missy showing how powerful she is, and
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
they have the effects budget to actually do that now, whereas back in the olden days of Doctor Who, when it was Roger Delgado, about the only thing the Master could do would be maybe sort of like hypnotize you and make you one of his thralls.
Yes.
And that was pretty much the extent of his power.
Yeah, because they didn't have the budget for anything else.
Yeah, and, you know, I think in so many ways, from a psychological standpoint, that's actually more frightening than Missy stopping planes in midair.
It is.
You know.
What did you think of Missy tossing Clara down the hole?
I thought it was quite funny, actually.
And she just deadpans, 20 feet.
I thought it was brilliant.
In a Twitter Q&A that Michelle Gomez did after they did the double feature today, she mentioned that a fan asked her, how did you keep a straight face when Missy shoved Clara down the hole? And she tweeted back, if you look closely, I didn't. They had to edit that scene very carefully.
Actually, there's another funny thing. I was reading an interview with Michelle Gomez in the TV guide, the UK TV guide, not the American one. And she was talking about, you know, they asked her whether she's been recognised yet on the streets in this interview, and she goes, "Oh yes, it's not so funny, especially when children recognise me." And she says it has happened. I was having a coffee in a coffee shop, and a little lad comes up to me and says, "Oh, you look like Missy off Doctor Who." And she goes, "That's because I am Missy off Doctor Who." And obviously the kid ran away. So she's having fun with it. Oh dear me. But I think she's really good.
She is.
You know. It'd be interesting, you know, because when I was a kid, we had a Saturday morning television still, whereas now Saturday morning television, it's on, we've got separate kids networks now, and the Saturday morning magazine programs that we used to have back in the 70s and 80s are gone. But back in the 70s and 80s, you know, there's actually footage on YouTube that you can find of Tom Baker and Lana Ward on these Saturday morning kids shows answering questions from phonings from kids. And I was just sort of thinking how much fun it would be to actually see Capaldi, Coleman and Michelle Gomez on one of these Saturday morning kids shows, you know, answering kids' questions.
That would be cool.
It'd be fun to see, but, you know, unfortunately it's not going to happen, you know, because we don't have those shows anymore. But, you know, I was just sort of like thinking what that'd be like, and, you know, I just think that they've hit on something here with Missy. It's just a pity that they've sort of like cut off the Master's genitalia in order to do it.
Now that I've seen her after the initial introductory stage, I like her more in that she's not as hyper as she was. She's kind of a middle ground between Roger Delgado and Sim.
Yeah, I kind of like that as well. And, you know, I also kind of like the way she was sort of like, when she got Clara to get in the Dalek as well, she was saying, "Say I love you." And the Dalek was, you know, she was saying, "I love you," and the Dalek was saying, exterminate, and stuff like that. I thought that was actually really clever.
It was.
And it's sort of one of those things. But there's also another. There was a thing, you know, in regards to the Impossible Girl story arc that hasn't really been serviced too much. It's been dropped twice now, and I remember it being dropped in the finale where Missy goes. Yeah, she makes some sort of like offhand remark about having introduced the Doctor to Clara, and she made the same offhand remark in the last episode. And I'm kind of thinking, you know, could that be it? Could that tie into the Impossible Girl story arc? You know, was the Master or Missy involved in this all along, even way back, but behind the scenes sort of thing?
Yeah, I'm actually wondering if they're going to go so far as to introduce a block transfer computation and have it be revealed that Missy actually made Clara to be the companion she is.
Mm-hmm. So she's made up of some sort of Time Lord DNA.
Yeah, or actually she's just made up of mathematics. Yeah, but my big fear, though, is that they're going to tie Clara into this idiotic prophecy thing, the hybrid warrior species, whatever that prophecy was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and also there was this sort of like the prophecy of the Time Lord Dalek.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
And I thought, is that Missy? Is that the Master?
Was Davros wrong, and the hybrid is another two species altogether? And that's going to tie into it somehow. I'm just tired of all the prophecies that are, you know, misinterpreted or only half interpreted or sort of wrong or whatever. We've had that sort of narrative shoved down our throats since 2005. It's not cool.
Yeah, they need to start paying some of this stuff off. And I think another thing that needs to happen this year is the Doctor needs to find Gallifrey.
Big time. Yeah, they can't keep dragging that out. There was a logic to it initially, but it's over now.
Yeah, I mean the fact that he knows that Gallifrey's still out there and still exists, and Gallifrey sent him in these regenerations, they need to pay that off. I mean, they bought Skaro back, so the next logical step would be to bring back Gallifrey. So like it's just one of those things. Anyway, I'm going to go on to some news, Doctor Who news for us to discuss. First off, as I was saying, the UK ratings for Doctor Who fell to 3.7 million as Rugby World Cup was on last night, which dominated the evening's viewing stats with 8.4 million viewers. BBC One series dips as Rugby World Cup appeals to more than 8 million. UK TV ratings roundup data supplied by BARB. Doctor Who fell below 4 million viewers on BBC One last night, according to overnight data. Facing competition from Rugby World Cup and ITV, 8.41 million, which is a 38.3% share, the Witches Millie appealed to an audience of 3.71 million, 16.6% from 7:45 onwards. Later on, the National Lottery, In It to Win It and Casualty were watched by 3.03 million, which is only 13.4%, and 3.8 million, 17.4% respectively. On BBC Two, Dad's Army repeat entertained 1.6 million, which is 7.3, and Midnight's Children logged 705,000 viewers from 8:15. Over on Channel 4, Paddy McGuinness's Celebrity Benchmark began with 546,000 in the 7 p.m. hour before Snow White and the Huntsman averaged 912,000. So basically, you know, sort of like it looks like if the rugby hadn't been on last night and it would have been an ordinary night with X Factor, Doctor Who might have fared better. But as I said earlier on, I think the reason they shown the feature length episode this afternoon on BBC One was because of the Rugby World Cup, because they kind of anticipated it.
Yeah, yeah. And so the numbers for the double feature will be more more in line with what they could expect on a more normal viewing night?
I don't know, because it's only in the middle of the afternoon, so it's kind of hard to gauge. Either way, I think it's going to be made up on iPlayer.
Yeah.
Because quite a lot of people watched it on iPlayer. I was forced to watch the first half of it last week on iPlayer because my cable internet went down, as well as my cable TV. It went down for about 4 hours, right in the middle of the first episode of Doctor Who. So I had no internet access, no Twitter, nothing for four hours. I couldn't even use Netflix or anything like that. I basically had nothing. My TV was out, so I had to watch a DVD or something.
Oh, wow.
And when it came back about 11:30. And I basically had to watch it on iPlayer. So I wouldn't be able to review it otherwise. In other news, Peter Capaldi has ruled out making more than one Doctor Who series a year. Peter Capaldi says production won't increase. I've only got so much energy. It seems we definitely won't be seeing more than one series of Doctor Who a year anytime soon. As Peter Capaldi has said, an increase in the number of episodes made would create casualties. The actor who plays the 12th incarnation of the Time Lord told an audience at the Radio Times Festival that the cast and crew don't have enough energy to make more than one series a year. We've been going since January 6th, and the crew, who are wonderful, are exhausted, he said, reports the Daily Mirror. But there reaches a point where you can't drive people any harder. We do the best we can to produce our show to an immensely high quality. If you did it all year round, there would be casualties. One of the casualties would be the quality of the show. He added that executive producer Stephen Moffat would not be able to commit to more episodes, saying it would compromise his vision. It's absolutely vital that we have Stephen working on it and having the vision on the whole thing, he said. He only has so much energy. I've only got so much energy. You want people running on all cylinders, so it's not going to happen. It looks like we'll have to content ourselves with just one series per year for now. To be honest, I think Peter Capaldi is being a bit of a wimp there, considering that William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton did it all year round.
True. There's something to be said for that. By the same token, I don't think William Hartnell and the early doctors had to contend with the same level of off-series PR that the modern doctors do.
Maybe. Actually, I think Hartnell did quite a bit of off-series PR because he actually loved the role, but it's probably not the same. It's probably wasn't as intrusive to be a celebrity back then either, because attitudes are much different. Whereas in the present day, there seems to be this obsession with celebrity sort of thing.
Yeah.
So
It becomes part of the job, whereas Hartnell didn't have to do that part of the job beyond a certain point.
And Troughton, I don't think Troughton ever really indulged it, to be honest.
No.
Beyond maybe conventions and stuff like that, which were few and far between back in the day. But I just find it a bit odd hearing Capaldi go on about, just filming 12 episodes a year is taking so much out on him when these other actors did it pretty much all year round. They didn't really break, They didn't call it seasons back then. If it was a successful TV series, just kept it going all year round.
Yeah. I think it's a function of times have changed, and I also think it's a function because that whole article had an entire section talking about Stephen Moffat, and I think he was saying it partly to cover for the fact that Stephen Moffat was not going to be doing any more than he was doing.
I think
you're trying to save face.
I think another thing as well is back during the original series, they I think they had a bigger writing staff on it.
That could be too.
I think they bought freelancers in and stuff like that. I mean, to be honest, they didn't really start splitting it off into series until Pertwee took over. And when Pertwee took over, they did so many serials a year, and I kind of vaguely remember this with Baker's Doctor right through to the last series with Sylvester McCoy. And what they did is they did so many serials over a period of a year, and they'd usually start airing them roundabouts on autumn, round about this time, and they'd usually run right into sort of maybe after Christmas. So they'd run from sort of like perhaps late autumn to around about late February, early March, and then they'd take a break for the summer and return the following autumn. Which, still that, to do that, that's probably a rougher schedule still than what the current series has.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting, and I think another factor in as well is the effects budget on these now. I mean, the money's on the screen, whereas with the classic series, it was kind of a running joke at how cheap it looked.
Yeah, so it didn't matter how many episodes you did, because it was going to look cheap no matter how many you did.
So, it's just strange thing to hear Capaldi say, given that everyone before him probably had a much rougher schedule.
That's probably true, but like you said, I think it's a combination of things. I think the answer to this is D, all of the above.
What do you prefer? Would you prefer to have more episodes a year, or?
It's hard to say, because I don't think the current writers would know how to write year-round anyway, because it would require a different kind of writing, a kind of writing that people just don't do now. It would require a kind of writing that would allow for the character beats, things like the Third Doctor chained in Atlantis talking about existential Gallifrey and daisies. They don't know how to do that anymore. And they would have to do more of that.
I think they probably need to have, and I hate to say it, I think they probably need to bring in some soap writers in order to do that. Maybe some of the people that write for EastEnders or Coronation Street, because they're writing all year round. Because those shows are on 3-4 times a week, every week. Same with Casualty in Holby City that we have here, the two big hospital dramas we have here, which I love, by the way. They're my guilty pleasures away from sci-fi and Doctor Who, is Holby City. And quite a few of the Holby City actors. One of the Holby City actors was in Star Wars Phantom Menace. He played Queen Amidala's bodyguard.
Oh, cool.
The black guy in Hope City. And one of the Casualty actresses was in Doctor Who. She played the submarine commander in last year's episode about the Mars Warriors.
Oh, cool. That's neat.
She was the Indian woman that was in command of the submarine.
Awesome.
So, So there's quite a lot of crossover between the BBC shows. Anyway, on to another bit of news. Jenna Coleman has said that she would return to Doctor Who if there was a good story. Actress says leaving Clara Rowe really overwhelmed her, and that it did not feel real. Fans of Doctor Who companion Clara Oswell might be able to stop weeping into their fish fingers and custard. That's an old pun. Actress Jenna Coleman may have confirmed that she's quitting her role on the BBC sci-fi hit last week, but she said she'd be open to return one day. I would always be happy to return if there was a good story, she told Entertainment Weekly, but I think we'll have to see what happens. Oh, crap. What was that? Coleman said that her next exit has been planned for some time, and that her final story is really cool. We decided last year it had only been one season with Peter, and there was a lot more to do, she said. So that's what it was, really. It was just about telling the best story we could. So I'm hoping that's what was done. I'm really pleased with it. I think it's really cool. People have to wait to see what happens. The actress who will soon play a young Queen Victoria in ITV's Victoria added that leaving Doctor Who after 3 years did not feel real at all. It was just really weird, she said. I was really overwhelmed. I recognise that it's a special part of my life. The storytelling is so dynamic and big and whimsical and magical. You feel like you are in a fairy tale, and it's really hard to walk away from that. It's a lot more than just a job. The friendships I have with the crew and Peter, it's very hard to say goodbye to it. So there we go. Yeah. I personally think that if they you know, write her out at the end of it, and they resume the Impossible Girl story arc, there wouldn't be really any reason to bring her back.
No, there won't be.
And, you know, to be honest, I didn't really particularly like what they did with Rose Tyler when they kept bringing her back.
No, they should have. The Doomsday Beach scene should have just been it. Her character deteriorated after that.
She did. I mean, you know, I think her character deteriorated while Ricky's character got better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said Ricky then, didn't I?
Yes, you did. But I knew where that came from. So.
Yeah, I was having a Ninth Doctor moment. Oh, dear me. But, yeah, talking about little side news, he's got a comic book coming out soon.
Yeah, I saw you did a story on that.
So, you know, it is. I mean, he's sort of like, he's done well for himself, you know. He was doing all this while he's doing Doctor Who, you know, the writing and acting sort of thing. So, you know, he seems to have sort of like done all right for himself.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad for him.
And so am I. I'd love to see, you know, Mickey's a character I'd love to see return to Doctor Who somehow.
Yeah. Especially since the Doctor's gone through so many regenerations since they last saw each other. I think 12 would have an interesting perspective on Mickey now, and Mickey would have an interesting perspective on 12.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, so like... Yeah, I can actually see Mickey, you know, calling 12 granddad. You know, but it's just thought he was an interesting character. I mean, I never liked the whole Rose and her mum thing. Never sat well with me.
No, I think that storyline was designed for people who like kitchen sink drama.
I think it was designed to actually get as many bums in seats in front of the early series of Doctor Who as possible. I mean, the ratings drop-off that's happened seems to have only really happened since Stephen Moffat came on board and it started being a bit more hardcore Doctor Who, and the science fiction element was coming into it a lot more than it would have done under Davis.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword, because I mean, for the most part, I still prefer Moffat to Davy simply because I don't like his insane drama, but I can understand why the lack of it would alienate other people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you know, it's kind of weird because, you know, they still kept so much of the grounding that Davis did, as in we see scenes of Clara teaching in school. And
yeah.
Stuff like that. And in the earlier part, she was looking. She was like looking after someone else's kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's there's still elements of that left in it. and stuff like that. Getting back onto the episode, though, the two episodes that aired, another aspect that I liked was it was sort of like mainly in the first and second where they sort of like flash back to the other doctors.
Yes, that bit at the beginning of the second where Missy is telling the story and you see her, you know, you see several different faces of the doctor because Missy's like, you know, whichever face, they're all the same to me. Just give them the eyebrows. Before that, you kind of see the first doctor flitting around and you see the second doctor flitting around because she's just, they're interchangeable to her.
Yeah, I mean, although I don't think she actually encountered the first doctor.
Not on screen.
Not, yeah, definitely not on screen, although, you know, he certainly did encounter the Meddling Monk.
Yes.
And that's a character I wished it.
Yeah, they bring him back, although the big Finnish version of him is hard to take, even harder than the Master. He's not evil, he's actually worse, he's thoughtless.
Uh-huh.
And it's harder to take, yeah.
Okay, was there anything else you want to add about the episode or anything Doctor Who related you'd like to add before we adjourn the show? Because we're going to be gone for a fortnight and we'll be coming back in 2 weeks to review the next episode.
Yes, we decided that was better. No, I just wanted to say that overall, I think that this was a very strong start to the new season. I'll be very curious to see how the various stories flow now that they're going to do two-parters throughout. I appreciated the cliffhanger. I missed the cliffhanger. For those who didn't watch Sarah Jane Adventures, they had cliffhangers on Sarah Jane Adventures. The Sarah Jane Adventures was more harkening back to the classic series anyway, just because it was Liz Slayton. So they had cliffhangers built into the DNA of Sarah Jane Adventures. This is the first time that they've systematically going to be trying cliffhangers since the main series came back in 2005. So this should be interesting overall just to see how that works. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, so am I. I mean, it's sort of like it's strange because I've kind of missed the cliffhangers from Doctor Who as well, because we used to have episodes that could be anything from two to four parts and we'd have a cliffhanger at the end of it. But what they've not done is they've not replayed the last scene of the last episode at the beginning of the next episode, but from a different angle, which is what they used to do in the old serials. Might be funny if they could start doing that, but you know it's understandable if they can't, because obviously they've got to keep it down to no more than 45 minutes so they can sell it to the US.
Right.
You know, which is kind of inconvenient because it spoils our fun. But anyway, that's about all we've got time for this week. We'll be back on Tuesday with our news show. We skipped it last week and also we skipped last Friday's show because I wasn't really feeling too well. I basically lost my voice. But that's about all we've got time for now. We'll be back at you later. Bye.